Manx Radio's 2016 election coverage.
Time now for another election 2016 candidate interview. Today we're joined by Jason Morehouse, who's standing in the new two-seat constituency of Arbury, Castletown and Maloo. Good afternoon, Jason. Welcome to the programme.
Good afternoon.
Tell us, first of all, a little bit about yourself.
Right. I currently teach at Castle Ocean High School. I did my degrees in economics-related subjects. That's where my expertise is coming from, and I think that's where we need people to be coming from.
All right. And how old are you?
Oh, that's a good question. One of my areas is that we live in a society where age and disability are limiting factors.
Okay.
And if you actually look at the shortlist towards who could be the next chief minister, there's one candidate on the list who's going to be under 40, which, when that comes around, it's going to be an interesting proposition.
So shall I just tick the box that says over 21?
Yeah, definitely.
All right, fair dues. And this isn't your first rodeo. You've stood for MHK before, haven't you?
Yeah, last time, that was my first venture into politics. I did my first degree in PPE, so I've some background information, knowledge on politics, but that was kind of cutting-edge stuff, going out and doing it.
Yeah. And what are people saying to you on the doorstep?
It's very variable. And I think the growth of the constituency has made a difference. We're getting more rural issues. We're getting issues of the roads in the countryside, things that weren't really considered last time. And then you get the key ones of things like Castletown that's struggling to come back. And
so it sounds as though they're all fairly local issues. If you're standing to be a commissioner, you could understand that. But, you know, are people recognising the fact that you're hoping to become a national politician and represent the whole island?
They're aware of that. But I think on the first kind of look at the situation, they're looking at what's impacting on their lives. When there's a news story about job losses or the state of the economy, then they suddenly realise that, yeah, this is a big issue. This is the thing they should be considering.
Yeah, I wonder that people sometimes don't look at the bigger picture. You know, people are, and in a way, that's maybe not a bad thing, that we all worry more about the things that directly affect us. But certainly with a general election like this, I would hope that people look at the broader issues and the broader threats. What do you see as the big threats to the island at the moment?
We've got the external threats in terms of what Britain does with the Brexit negotiations. We're on the coattails of that, so whatever happens, we're going to be affected. But also key island issues in terms of things like government spending. By the end of this parliament, the reserves will have gone. And if there's another VAT cut, we could be in really difficult situations.
And do you think there is going to be another VAT cut?
Hopefully not.
OK, it's just that you cite it as a potential problem. I'm just wondering if it is a potential problem or just something that we all need to worry a bit more about.
Yeah, I think we need to be concerned. It's a real possibility. When it hit us so hard previously, we need to be considering worst-case scenario. And
but I think that, according to Treasury, the formula that's now been agreed on has been agreed by both sides, and everybody's happy that we're getting our fair share. So it's unlikely to change, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely for the short term, we're all right. But again, at the end of this Parliament, we're looking into possible changes. So it's kind of always a five-year turnaround period. So there are possibilities that the next election, that could be an issue.
You say that the country could be broke by the end of this next administration. How realistic is that? Because I've spoken to a few people recently who have got a very gloomy and pessimistic view of the future. They would say a more realistic view of the future. Where do you sit? Is your glass half empty or half full?
It's definitely half full, but we work around that worst case scenario. And the government needs to be thinking, how can we actually cut the costs? How can we get more from our resources? How can we actually get more businesses onto the island? And more importantly, how can we get existing businesses to grow?
So plan for the worst, but hope for the best.
Definitely.
Yeah, all would-be politicians are saying we need to grow the economy. If it was that simple, surely we would have done it by now.
We are doing it. We look at kind of 5% growth. We've had 30-odd years of continuous growth. We have no recession yet. Fingers crossed it won't happen. But we are in a very good position.
OK. So how would you grow the economy? What would your contribution be to that?
In terms of looking at Castletown, I feel that Castletown could contribute a lot. If you just go back 7 years to 2009, Castletown was a different place. It had energy. Kellers Yard was being completed. We got companies like Celta Manx starting to take off. We got other businesses like Capital International. Things were really moving.
Musical Bollards?
That was slightly later, but yeah, they came on and perhaps they signify the low point. But now we kind of hopefully turning. We've got a new town clerk. There's new commissioners with youth and enthusiasm. We've got Costa coming. Once you get businesses like Costa moving into the area, other big nationals start thinking, oh, what about Castletown? There's been a rumour that Marks and Spencers are coming. I've been in contact with a company and they've confirmed that they're looking at Castletown. And if they were to come, that would be brilliant. But we've got that kind of issue again. If Marks and Spencers come, they'd be requiring that alcohol licence.
Well, I was going to say, it's all very well saying that you'd like to welcome, you know, big multinationals to Castletown. The town doesn't really have much of a great track record in welcoming them, does it?
That's it. Tesco tried three times and on each attempt they got turned down. And it's...
But that's a commissioner's issue, isn't it? It's not an MHK's issue.
Yeah, but when it kind of... When they review the performance of an MHK, they look at what's happened to their local area. And so, you know, it's something that needs to be considered by the successful candidate, that if Marks and Spencers do come along, that they're assisted and helped.
OK. You say we need a more realistic government. What do you mean by that? Have we got a House of Keys full of dreamers?
I feel that we're still kind of living in the golden age. We've got money being spent. We've got ministers saying that the money had to be spent on something, and it's just kind of, why? You know, we've got 88,000 people on the island, potentially less, and, you know, they're expected to contribute to these grandiose projects, and, you know, we do need things to happen. We can't just stop them and say, no more spending, but we need to make greater use of what we've got.
OK. You say that, you mentioned Brexit earlier on, you say the negotiations in the wake of that can't be left to chance. Is there any implication that there would be? And to be honest, you also said that, you know, we're on the coattails of what the UK does. Is there any point in even discussing Brexit in that, you know, we're going to have to react to what the hand that we're dealt, aren't we?
That's it. The problem was that in the 1970s, when a similar situation was going on in terms of Britain going into Europe, we were kind of overlooked and the Protocol 3 came in and helped us out. That was good luck. In 2017, 18, 19, we need to be talking to people, making noises, so hopefully we aren't left on the sidelines again. There is that situation that's happening. We need to be talking to people like the other Crown dependencies, putting forward our case, but also looking at existing businesses that are here. Yesterday I went to see friends and they were basically saying a lot of their business is done through Asia. And I said, well, is that possible? Because we hear all this in the news that you can't trade with another country without trading agreements and all this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And he said, well, of course it is. You know, we've established links, we can extend them. We're currently doing nothing in South America. That's an area we could go into. And again, I said, is that possible? And he said, yeah, of course, there's a licensing agreements and things that have to be gone through, but it's not a complicated process. It's not going to stop us from achieving.
OK. You say that the island needs MHKs with academic backgrounds. That's all well and good, but aren't practical experience and political experience just as important? I mean, you know what they say, and I'm the father of a school teacher, that if you can do, and if you can't, teach. So is it a good background, really, for politics?
Definitely, yeah. As you suggest, we need a mix. We don't want all academics. We don't want all people who've kind of gone out and experienced things. I'm lucky because I've actually done a subject that links to the real world. My family's got a business and that's kind of meant to have had links with customers and what people expect. And so, yeah, I've got a strong academic background, but I also am aware of things like customer care, what customers expect. But the key thing is that comes around all the time is costs. What's it actually costing to produce an item? And once you've actually got the costs, can you actually cover it? One thing I do Castle Russian is Shares for Schools, which is a competition where students invest in real companies, and we've got a reasonably good record for that. We've won the regional three times in the past 10 years and the national once. We're actually in London on referendum day and they saw the stock market open. So, you know, we actually spent a lot of time looking at how a company should be performing, and that links into how a government should be operating.
Well, people say that it, you know, it ought to be run like some sort of a corporation, Isle of Man PLC. Others say you can never run a government the same way that you'd run a company. A company is predicated purely on making profits. A government's got to look after its people first.
Yeah. When it comes down to a government, though, the key thing is what they can spend on the people. Now, we've got a situation in the Isle of Man where the government's become too big. If you look at something like the prison, we've got 91, 92 people in prison for doing various crimes. And we've got 93 employees. Now, out of the 93 employees, 58 of them are prison officers.
Yeah.
Now, you actually need the prison officers. They're going to be employed by the government, etc., in the short term. And then you've got 35 others who are kind of doing other things like they're operating the gym and that sort of thing. So those could actually be on private contracts, could be operating in a different way.
But isn't that just moving the money around to different areas by putting people on contract rather than being employed?
Definitely, but the problem is that once a government employs someone like myself, they're taking long-term responsibility for me. They're actually making all contributions. They're actually then expected to provide pensions, and it's not just a short-term thing, it's a long-term commitment.
So you're saying that people who are currently on that kind of a scheme ought to be cast out effectively, given the same job but working on a contract with no sick pay, no holiday pay, no pension plan? I mean, that seems a little bit cruel.
Oh, certainly not. When it comes down to it, what we've got is two areas. We've got the government, who should be making sure there's an economy where businesses can operate and everyone in society gets a chance. But then you get the businesses who are going to be providing the best services, reducing their costs. But the government's then coming back at those businesses and ensuring that there are pension contributions being made, that the staff are actually getting decent working conditions and everything's going to plan. So it's not a case of the government saying, oh, you do that and we'll turn a blind eye. The government must be regulating, making sure everything's going to plan. So if you look at things like preschool,
yeah,
you've got a situation where the government's now spending as much as they were 5 years ago on preschool. You've got it being operated by the private sector, but is it being actually managed as effectively as it could be? You know, the government needs to make sure that when they kind of go that step further, the customers are getting a good experience, but also the employees are getting a fair share of what they should be receiving.
Where are the inefficiencies in public service then? So if things can be corporatised or privatised and they can make a profit for the corporate provider of that service, and the corporate provider of that service can do it cheaper than the government or the public authority can do it, why is that? Where are the inefficiencies?
It's basically coming down to economies of scale. If you've got a large company, they can buy in bulk, they can do things in terms of management expertise that one single provider can't do. So if you get a company like Serco that is involved in operating prisons, they operate prisons around the world, so they know what staff they're requiring, they know what expectations there are, everything's followed, everything's carried out. Whereas when a government operates a prison, they may have some idea, but they kind of be using generalists, be using people who've perhaps not got the best qualifications, perhaps people who are being given a chance to work in that area.
Well, in fairness, you would think that the prison governor, who's a very experienced person, would know exactly how much they need to staff the prison. And, you know, by suggesting that maybe we could reduce costs there, I wonder if that's achievable or desirable, to be honest.
It's definitely achievable. In terms of the desirability, it's desirable from the issue of cost.
Well, of course it is, but, you know, an awful lot of things. You could save a huge amount of money, but are you doing the right thing is the question.
I think given the state of the economy, we need to be reducing spending, and that's really what we need
at
to come
back
costs,
to. Just reduce
No, not at all costs, no. We've kind of had the impression of the past 5 years we've had a balanced budget, and the balanced budget's been achieved at the £100 million of reserves being eaten into every year. So what I would suggest is that £100 million can't be eaten into. we've got to have a balanced budget based on the money we've got.
All right.
And actually take a bit more and add to reserves, but yeah.
You say that you could facilitate change. How? I mean, explain that to me.
In terms of facilitating change, I was actually focusing on Castletown for that point of view, because in terms of Castletown, I feel that we have got to a key crossroads. You've got people like Mr. Tilliard, who's operating College Yard. You've got the commissioners. They've kind of had 5, 6, 7 difficult years, and I feel that, you know, there needs to be a way through that. There needs to be a solution found.
For who?
For Castletown, but also those groups of individuals. So in terms of Mr. Tilliard, it's doing him no benefits being in that situation. In terms of Castletown commissioners, the conflict that's arisen has just occupied their time.
But isn't it just a fact of life that every now and then there will become an impasse between two different bodies? Is it the job of the national politician to jump in and get involved in that?
I think when it actually starts to hit impact on an area, so the area is not achieving its full potential, then yeah, because you've got a situation where locals aren't having the best place to live, but also other people aren't visiting. You know, people say, what is in Castletown? Whereas, you know, somewhere like Ramsey and Peel that were in a similar situation to what Castletown is today 10, 15 years ago, are completely different.
Well, Castletown's got the thing about being the ancient capital of the Isle of Man, hasn't it? The original House of Keys, you've got Castle Rushen down there.
Yeah.
You're not short of tourist attractions as such compared to some of the other places that you mentioned. You say that you want to create an urban environment in Castletown that attracts new business.
Yeah.
How would you do that?
I think one of the key aspects is where startup businesses can locate. We've got potential sites. The government's been really good in terms of offering support. But one key issue is, where does the business go once it reaches its maximum potential in Castletown? In the last 5 years, we've had 350 jobs leaving Castletown and going to Braddon. And that key issue is, why can't you stay in Castletown? And I've spoken to people like Mr. Mumry. I've spoken to Mr. Christian at Canada Life. And they've given me the same thing. They wanted to stay in Castletown. They did all they could to stay in Castletown, but there wasn't the actual accommodation. So we need to look at things around the airport. There's a possibility of the airport gateway coming through. If that was to come to fruition, then companies may consider moving back to Castletown, and those companies that reach their peak potential in Castletown may think, yeah, there are sites we can locate too.
I hear what you're saying, but surely if any company went to Castletown commissioners or to the government and said, I'd like to build a brand new office building for 500 people, 600 people, whatever it might be, then they'd all be so busy falling over backwards to help that you know, the place would be built in a week. I can't believe that Castletown's growth is being limited by the fact that there are no units for people to move into.
I think you've got the situation where it's not just a shed they're wanting. They're actually wanting a attractive environment. They're wanting somewhere where similar firms are located. So if you go to somewhere like Braddon, which is nearly full at the moment, you've got a situation where you have attractive buildings. You've got a cluster of similar companies together, whereas if you were to move opposite the airport at the moment, you have a situation which it's really an industrial estate.
Have you answered your own question there? You say that if you move to Braddon, you've got a cluster of other businesses in the same area. So
yeah,
on the basis that a lot of people move between jobs, between these different businesses, isn't it inevitable that clusters will grow in certain areas to the detriment maybe of others?
Definitely, and that's why Castletown needs to make sure that as Braddon fills up, we've got a suitable location that other companies can come to, and that cluster can grow and we can succeed.
All right. Where do you stand on consultations, out of interest? Oof. Government consultations?
They're very, very costly. In terms of consultations, if we bring experts in, it just seems to act as a delay tactic. You look at things like the prom, we've been spending 5 years, spent over £1 million, and we're no closer now than we were 5 years ago. Now, in terms of political responsibility, someone should have said, yep, this needs doing, how are we going to get it done?
So you'd rather the job had been done and then that person who agreed to that, that stood up and was counted afterwards, and if people hate it, then it's his fault and he has to resign or whatever. You think that's better than trying to please all the people all the time?
Yeah.
Okay. You want a limit put on management numbers in government. Is that possible, or does that mean a slash and burn policy?
No, I think it's another thing that comes from the private sector. That, you know, if you look at companies like Marks & Spencer, when they get a new chief executive, one of the first things they do is look at that middle management grouping. And if they can replace that, you've got the chance that new ideas, new people are moving up. But also the whole system regenerates and creates new ideas and new opportunities.
Okay. You're unhappy with the governor's inauguration being held in Douglas this time. We've heard the reasons for the change in venue. Wasn't the later visit of the new governor to Castletown an appropriate compromise?
No. It's a shame that, you know, that when we've got something so magnificent in the heart of Castletown, that we couldn't actually got it up to scratch. Because when it comes down to it, what sort of level of inadequacy was there in the castle? You know, you've got tourists going around all the time, you've got a relatively nice environment. It's in a building of that age, you're not going to get perfection. It's not going to be perfectly gleaming walls and smooth surfaces. And so I feel it's a shame that, you know, the governor couldn't actually experience that kind of historical place and just done as we've done in the past.
You say that being an MHK is a long-standing ambition. I mean, certainly you've been trying to get in for 5 years now. What have you done in terms of involvement in politics during the last 5 years?
In terms of the last 5 years, initially I was going to stand as a commissioner, but I was told that being so far out of the area, that wasn't a potential. This spring, I was told it was an option, but I didn't think it was fair to actually stand in the election and then go for MHK with the potential of winning and then creating the by-election. So in terms of active politics, I've not done a huge amount, but I've been out there talking to people, looking at the situation, and I have a better idea of what is required now than I had 5 years ago.
Is that not biased by the fact that you probably spend your working day with young people?
I think that's an advantage. New ideas, new thoughts, and such a range of individuals. You mean, look at what they're going to do. You know, you've got people who are going out potentially sweep the roads, other people are going to go out and change the world. So I've been in a brilliant place.
All right, you criticise the level of pay of some public servants, but isn't it important that government offers competitive rates to get the right people?
Yeah, I do think it's important, but we've actually got this situation where those people on really high wages have increased dramatically. We've got 25 more only over 105,000 we did in 2011, and 58 people earning more than 150,000, which is a huge amount of money. Now, I know a lot of it's linked to the hospital, but it's still that issue that it's the working man's tax that's going to pay for this.
Yeah, but isn't it wrong to sometimes focus on the high earners? I mean, you know, if I could employ somebody and it cost me £1 million a year, but they made me £2 million a year, then the £1 million would be a good investment, wouldn't it?
I'd want more than £1 million from that employee.
No, they make him.
They're making money.
Or saving money, or they're providing a service that, you know, is worth those kind of numbers.
But in terms of government, it's a lot of people earning a lot of money.
Okay. I presume that if you are elected, you'd give up teaching. Would that be a wrench?
It would, yeah. I've spoken to the head, and I really want to keep links with Castle Rushen, and the minimum I would do would be continue with Junior Achievement and Shares for Schools.
Yeah.
Junior Achievement's been amazing, kind of get young people involved in the real world, they create businesses, and that's the thing I'd like to do.
You say the island needs a decisive government. How decisive can it be, and how decisive could it be with new members who really don't know the ropes? It's going to take you a while to settle in and to get the hang of things.
I think a lot of the key issues that are going to come up on the horizon have been discussed, have been thought about with a very large civil service who have got breakdowns of possible situations, possible answers, possible problems. And so I think that, you know, those people who are going to become part of government in couple of months' time, should be in a position to make decisions.
What about things like the public sector pensions row at the moment? Do you think that enough's been done?
Yes, pensions are always a difficult issue, because with a pension pot, what you're actually looking at is that worst-case scenario of being if everyone was to retire on the 5th of August, what would we have in the pot? And the thing is, on the 5th of August, we've got people who are 21, 18, 65, 80, and that's the issue, that there is an issue with the pension pot, but it's not something that is going to happen today. But it's coming back to my issue of the number of workers the government's got and that spending.
10 seconds, Jason, to explain to the people of Arbury, Castletown and Maloo why they should vote for you.
I feel that it's time for change, and someone who's got an economic background should be useful and hopefully help into the future.
Candidate for Arbury, Castletown and Maloo, Jason Morehouse, thanks for joining us today.
Keep up to date with the latest House of Keys General Election 2016 coverage on manxradio.com.